We're holding on your Gimel Amud Beis, the third line of the wide lines. We learned in the Mishnah that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue about this whole matter of Tzaras Erva that we've been dealing with so far in the Masechta. So to recap, when you have a case where one of the brothers is married to a woman who is an Erva to another one of the brothers, as well as he's married to an unrelated woman who therefore is her Tzara, Beis Hillel holds, and that's what we've been learning so far, that both women are potter from Chalitza and Yibum, only if there's another brother to whom neither of them is an Erva, then he does Chalitza or Yibum, and then if he does Yibum with the Tzara, and he himself has another wife, and then he passes away without children, then the Tzara's Tzara is potter, and so on and so forth. All of that was according to Beis Hillel. But Shammai disagrees with the whole concept. They say, of course, the Erva herself is potter from Chalitza or Yibum, but not her Tzara, and we discussed in the Gemara yesterday, why Beis Shammai would hold that. So now the Gemara is going to get into a discussion of the whole matter of doing of having different groups following different opinions in halacha, and then relate that back to our Mishnah and see how is it possible that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are following different understandings of the halacha. So Tnanha, and we learn in a Mishnah in Megillah. Megillah Nikris ba'achados. So the Megillah can be read on the various days between the 11th and the 15th of Adar, like Pachas v'Yoser, not earlier and not later. But the point is that we do have different times when different people read the Megillah. Amalei Rish Lakish l'Rav Yechanan. So Rish Lakish asked Rav Yechanan, Ikri kan loytis goydidu. Shouldn't we apply over here what it says in the pasuk? Loitis goydidu, where, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, the basic meaning of loitis goydidu means don't scrape or cut yourself in mourning for a dead relative. So it was a common practice among the goyim in those times that when a relative of theirs died, they would cut themselves and scrape themselves in mourning. Good morning, Aaron. So the Torah is warning you loitis goydidu, don't do that. But also, Rish Lakish is saying another meaning of loitis goydidu is don't make yourselves agudos, don't make yourselves into different groups, each of which is following a different understanding of halacha. So don't you have or different groups that do the mitzvahs in a different way. So don't you have an issue over here, says Rish Lakish to Rav Yechanan, that you have different groups are reading the Megillah on different days. Rishonim talk about is the question from all five of the dates mentioned in the Mishnah. In other words, as we learned in Megillah, you have the reason why there are five dates is you have three different groups. You have the people in the walled cities who read the Megillah on the 15th, the people in the unwalled cities on the 14th, and then we have the people in the villages where the Chachamim gave them a break, a dispensation, and allowed them to lay in earlier on the 11th or 12th or 13th, whichever one is the Yom HaKnisa. So is Rav Shlokish's question from all of those, or is his question particularly some of the Rishonim learn that way? For example, later in the Sugya, Tosfos learns that way. On the other hand, some of the Rishonim say that really, no, the question isn't from the Bnei Akfarim, because fine, their basic time to read is on the 14th. The Chachamim gave them a break and allowed them to read earlier in order to make it a little more convenient for them. The question is really from the people in the walled and the unwalled cities where they're unwalled are reading on the 14th and the walled on the 15th. Isn't that loitzasu agudas agudas that you're making different groups? Rashi says, denira kinoigin to beis turis, it looks like they're following two different turis. So Rashi also learns that we're talking about all three groups, the Kfarim and the Ayoras Golas and the Mukaf and Chayma, and Tosfos later on in the Sugya learns the same way. But again, there are Rishonim who learn that the question isn't from the Kfarim, just from the Ayoras Golas and the Mukaf and Chayma. Anyway, don't you have that issue? So the Gemara asks, before we get back to the answer to Rish Lakish's question, first of all, the Gemara says, "Hi, loitis goydidu, we borrowed by the gufe." What do you mean? You need the word loitis goydidu to teach us the basic din that the pasuk is saying. The pasuk is saying that you're not allowed to wound or cut or scrape yourself in mourning for a dead relative. By the way, Tosfos mentions a story in Sanhedrin when Rabbi Eliezer passed away and Rabbi Akiva was hitting himself and beating himself until blood flowed. So Tosfos says, first of all, that the Torah is asking you to scrape or cut. He wasn't. He was banging so much that blood flowed, and also because it wasn't in mourning for Rabbi Eliezer so much, but for the Torah that was now lost, at all the Torah that Rabbi Eliezer knew and had never had a chance to teach, that now that's gone. Anyway, but the pasuk is telling you that you're not allowed to do that for a mess. So what are you Rish Lakish trying to use loytis go to do for a different sense? The answer is imkem lemakro loyti go to do. The answer is if it just meant you're not allowed to scrape yourself in mourning for a dead relative, then it would have said loyti go to do with one sup. My tis go to do. Instead, it says it with two tops. Shmamin alahochi hudasa. So it means that it's coming to teach us this business of agudas agudas. So then the question is, so maybe the pasuk is only telling us loy sasu agudas agudas. And the answer is in pain, lemakura loy togoidu. In that case, then the pasuk not only would have used one tuf, but also only one dalid, and the word loy togoidu would be meloshan aguda. So my loitis goidu shmami notarti. So the word loitis goidu implies both that you're not allowed to scrape or cut yourself in mourning for a mess, and also that you're not allowed to make different groups that are following the halacha differently. Now, how does that work out? Of course, nowadays when there are so many different minhagim, we'll talk about that as we go through the sugya, how exactly that works out. Anyway, so that's the question. The Rashba actually learns that in the end that Rabbi Yochanan is going to end up telling Rish Lakish that there really is no such din of loytis goydu. So therefore, there's not a problem. On the other hand, the Ritva says, look, I mean, everybody knows there's a halacha of loytis goydu as in loysasu agudas agudas. So he says that actually what we can end up saying is, in a way, those two things are related. The Pasuk is saying, bonim atam l'Hashem alekeichem, you are children of Hashem, therefore, loitis go to do. So it means two things. Because you're children of Hashem, therefore, don't disfigure yourselves and scrape yourselves for a mess the way the goyim do. And second of all, also, don't divide yourselves, being that you're children of Hashem, don't divide yourself into different factions and cliques that are each going to be doing the halacha differently. Anyway, so that's Rish Lakish's question. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan answers him, answering a question with a question. Ad kan loy shanisa. What have you not learned all this time until you came to Masechta Megillah? You never learned such a thing where different places have different minhagim. What about there's a Mishnah in Pesachim that says Mokim shenogu lasis malacha ba'avit Pesachim ad chatzos, in a place where they have the minhag to do malacha on erev Pesach until chatzos oisin, and they're allowed to Mokim shenogu shaloy lasis ein oisin, and in places where the minhag is not to, then they're not allowed to. Meaning the you're not allowed to do malacha on erev Pesach after chatzos. One reason being because that was when they brought the Korban Pesach, and when a person's Korban is being brought, then it's considered a mini Yom Tov for them, and therefore, even though nowadays we don't have a Korban Pesach, that halacha still applies, but during the morning there were different minhagim. So you see already from there that there are different minhagim, and there's no problem of Lysas or Agudas Agudas in that. Omalei, so the Shlacher says, Amin halacha no isura. What are you talking about? How is that comparable? I'm talking about a case of Isur, where, in other words, if you do differently when it comes to the cities laying the Megillah, if they lay on the wrong day, they're not Yotze. To Amr of Shaman Ba'aba, Amr of Yechanan, that when the Pasuk says L'kayim es yimei ha'purim bizmanei hem, when it says that Mordechai and Esther wrote to the Jewish people to observe the days of Purim in their times, Zmanim habit tiknolam chachamim, means the chachamim to begin with set up many different times. The people in the regular cities davka have to lay in on the 14th. The people in the walled cities davka have to lay in on the 15th, and they can't be yotza on each other's days. So therefore, that's a matter of iser. You can't say it's not just a matter of that it's a minhag in some places, one and the other. You're asking me why I didn't have the question on the Mishnah in Pesachim, which deals with a minhag. They're not comparable at all. So the Gemara says, "V'hasam labi sura habya." So what are you telling me? There's no iser involved in the melacha on erev Pesach. V'hatnan, the Mishnah there in Pesachim continues, "Balayla or halayla, during the night going into the 14th of Nisan." V'shamay oisurin v'sil matirin. V'shamay says it's also to do melacha. V'sil says it's mutter. So you see, it's an actual matter of iser and heter. The Pashtos, until the halacha was paskin, some people followed Beis Hillel and some people followed Beis Shammai. So the question still stands. Then Rabbi Yochanan would say to Rish Lakish. So you're telling me that you're only having a problem when it's a matter of Isser Veheter, and that's why your question was from Megillah. But why didn't you ask from Pesachim, where we see that this business of Malacha before Chatzos and Erev Pesach is also a matter of Isser Veheter? Omale, so Rish Lakish answers that I didn't have a problem with. Hasam Haroya Ima Malacha Udalesle. Because when a person doesn't do malacha on the night going into on the night of Bedikas Chametz, the night going into the 14th, which is Beis Shammai is saying it's also to do malacha, well, for that matter, on the morning of the 14th, people don't realize that he's not doing malacha because of the Isser. People think, okay, he doesn't happen to have any work to do, so therefore that doesn't really look like two Torahs. So therefore, I didn't have a question from that. My question is from Megillah, where it's very clear when a person is reading the Megillah on the 14th or on the 15th, respectively, or even the Bnei Akfarim, and they're reading earlier, then it seems like it's too Torahs. By the way, so Rashi had said at the beginning of the sugya over here that the problem is Nira Kenoigan Beis Torahs. It looks like they're following two different Torahs. The Rambam says it differently. The Rambam phrases it that it brings to Machloikas Gedolus, that it brings the big Machloikas in when people do differently. Which a nafkamina would be when there's no Machloikas involved. Then when it can't bring to Machloikas, then what we'll see as we go through the sugya what comes out of that. So the Gemara continues. What about? So you're saying that anytime there's a matter of Isser and Heter, then you have a problem of Agudas. What about our Mishnah? Where we see that Beis Shammai holds that Soras Erva is allowed in Yibum, and Beis Hillel says that not. That's a clear matter of Isser Veheter. And still, apparently, until the halacha was decided like Beis Hillel, then Beis Shammai were entitled to follow their own opinion. And the answer is, your Shlokish answer is, Mi Sabrat also Beis Shammai Kedivrehim. You think that Beis Shammai actually followed their opinion in practice? No, Loi also Beis Shammai Kedivrehim. Beis Shammai, says your Shlokish, did not actually follow their opinion in practice. They held that the Tzores are mutter to do Yibum with the surviving brothers. But they didn't actually go and paskin halacha in practice to do that way. Because of the problem of Agudas Agudas. In fact, Tosfos says, we actually have examples in Shas where we see clearly that Beis Shammai did follow their own opinion. But okay, the Gemara is going to anyway go on to slug up this point anyway that they didn't do. And the Gemara is going to end up saying that they did. They most certainly did follow their own opinion. And we're going to have a different answer. We're going to have a different answer for this whole matter. Anyway, so for Rabbi Yochanan Omar, also for also. Rabbi Yochanan says they did and they did. As a matter of fact, they most certainly did follow their opinion in halacha. And the also for also, among other things, means they themselves did, and other, the Talmidim of Beis Shammai themselves, and other people followed Beis Shammai in that as well, and also did. So yes, they did in fact do. So this is why the Rashba says that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, look, there's no problem of agudas at all. The whole thing doesn't exist because we see that Beis Shammai actually followed their own opinion, according to the Ritva and the other Rishonim and Achronim, who say that even Rabbi Yochanan would agree it's a matter of loy tiskoydidu. Then they would have to explain, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain, why in this particular case Beis Shammai following their own opinion is not an issue of that. And the Gemara says it will plug to the Rav or Shmuel. This is actually the same machloikas as Rav and Shmuel have. The same machloikas of Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, whether Beis Shammai actually followed their own opinion and practice or not. Rav and Shmuel argue the same point. The Rav amalai osu, Beis Shammai kedivrei, and Shmuel amalai osu, same thing. So the question is, Amos, when are we talking about, according to Rabbi Yochanan and according to Shmuel, who say that Beis Shammai did in fact follow their own opinion in halacha, which would mean, for example, that if there was this case of Tzoras Erva, then they would tell her to go ahead and do Yibum. When was the time when they did that? Or when was the time, Bechlal, that we even have the Machlokas, whether they did or not? Ilema Koidim Basko. Now, the Gemara tells us in Eruvin that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued, and eventually a Basko came out and said that Eluve Elu Dibre Elikim Chaim, but the halacha is like Beis Hillel. So if you're talking before the Basko, And where at that point, there's no particular reason to favor Bais Hillel over Bais Shammai, my time of demand, demand Amalai also. Then why would Rish Lakish and Rab be saying that that Bais Shammai didn't follow their own opinion? Why ever not? There shouldn't be a problem with it. Or even fine, you're going to say Lo Tisgoi to do. Doesn't mean that Bais Shammai has to not do according to their opinion. Bais Hillel can do not according to their opinion. Bais Hillel, Bais Hillel can't say they hold, for example, that this woman is an Erva. They can't very well say that she should do Yibum. But at least they should meet Bais Shammai halfway and require her to do Chalitza before the Baskel. The Elal Acha Baskel, if you're saying it's after the Baskel came out, my time and demanda Amo Osu, then why would anybody say that Bais Shammai continued to follow their own opinion if it was clear that now the Halacha is going to be like Bais Hillel? Now, you're going to ask anyway, since when do we follow a Baskel and Halacha? So hold that thought a minute, because we'll get back to that in a moment. And the answer is, Iboyosem Akodem Baskel. So the answer is, Iboyosem Akodem Baskel, Iboyosem Al Acha Baskel. Actually, you could say that the Machlokas applies to both periods. Iboyosem Akodem Baskel, because of going to Bais Hillel Ruba. The scenario would be when Bais Hillel was the majority. Now, many times, it wasn't always the case. For example, when they gathered in the attic of Hananya ben Chizkiya ben Goran over there and ended up making the Yud Ches Dover, at that point, Bais Shammai were actually the majority. But many times, Bais Hillel was the majority. So before the Baskel, so Lamanda Amaloy also, so the opinion that says Rish Lakish and Rab, who say that Bais Shammai did not follow their own opinion, well, the reason is, Bais Hillel Ruba, because Bais Hillel is the Roiv, and the Torah says Achri Rab Lahapis, and Bais Shammai knew that. So therefore, even before the Baskel came out, they would know, in this particular case, we were outvoted by Bais Hillel, so therefore we have no choice but to follow their opinion. L'manda Amar Loi Osu, U'manda Amar Osu, and on the other hand, the opinions Rav Yochanan and Shmuel, who say that they did follow, that they still continued to follow their own opinion, because they would say, Kiyas Linen Basa Ruba, you know, when do we go according to the Ruv? Heche Dechi Hadadi Nim. Only when the two sides are equally balanced. They're all equally great Tamar Chachamim. And then the Torah tells us, follow the majority. Hochabis Shammai Mechad Ditve. But over here, Bais Shammai are sharper, and they know, so they're able to give better explanations for their dinim. And therefore, that could be a reason to say that maybe Achir Rabban Lahapis is not meant to apply in such a case. So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel could still be saying that even after that Baskel, or before the Baskel, Bais Shammai is going to say, yes, Bais Hillel is the majority, but we are Mechadidi Tvei, and therefore we don't have to follow the majority, because eventually, who knows, we might even be able to convince Bais Hillel of the correctness of our position. So that's one way of understanding the Machlokas. And Iboyosem al Acha Baskel. Another possibility is the Machloikas, whether Bais Shammai followed their own opinion, can be after the Baskel. Manda Amalai also. So the opinion that says Rish Lakish and Rab, who says that Bais Shammai did not follow their own opinion, well, we know why. Don't knock the Baskel. Because after all, the Baskel came out and said that the Halacha is like Bais Hillel. Manda Amalai also Rabbi Yeshua. Whereas the opinion that says they still continue to follow their own opinion, that would be, according to Rabbi Yeshua, Do'ama Ein Mashkichin Bebaskel, namely that in the famous story of Tanu Shalachnoi, Rabbi Yeshua had said you don't pay attention to a Baskel. So you have the story over there where Rabbi Eliezer, who actually himself was one of the Talmidim of Bais Shammai, continued to hold his opinion against all the other Chachamim. And at one point, a Baskel came out and said, what are you arguing with Rabbi Eliezer? The halacha is like him. And Rabbi Yeshua gets up and says, Loi b'shamayim he, and we don't listen to Baskels in matters of determining in halacha. Tosfos points out then, so in that case, then why are we, don't the other Chachamim agree with that concept also? After all the other Chachamim continued to disagree with Rabbi Eliezer. So Tosfos says, first of all, two things. Number one, in that story, the Baskel came out in honor of Rabbi Eliezer. When Rabbi Eliezer is debating with the Chachamim, and he's trying to prove his point, and have them accept his opinion, and they're not, he finally says, after he tried several other Nisim to try to convince them, and they weren't convinced, He said, if the halacha is like me, then let a voice come from Shemayim and say so. So a voice came from Shemayim doesn't mean the halacha is actually like him. It means Rabbi Eliezer is a great tzaddik, and therefore the Ritzon Yirei of Yas, that tzaddik goes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Makayim. So Hashem gave a baskel doesn't mean the other chachamim are obligated to follow it. That's one answer of Tosfos. The other answer is, when do we follow a baskel is when it confirms the halacha as we know it. In this particular case, when Rabbi Eliezer asked for a baskel, he's a yochid against Rabbim. There, for sure, we don't say mechadidi tvei. We don't say because he's sharper, then therefore we should follow him if he can't convince the other chachamim. So the baskel is coming, Rabbi Yeshua points out over there, is coming in opposition to what we know that Torah loy b'shamayim. On the other hand, when it comes to Bishama and Bishillel, the fact is, we're saying Bishillel was the majority. The only reason to argue that the halacha should be like Bishamai was because they were mechadidi tvei, they were particularly sharp. So therefore, but ordinarily, by default, we would say that the halacha is achir rabim lahatis. And therefore, the baskel just comes to confirm that here you're applying achir rabim lahatis correctly. And therefore, so Rabbi Yeshua might still say that you don't accept the baskel ever. The other chachamim would take a middle ground. They would say normally you can, when the baskel is coming to confirm what we know the halacha, then we can accept it. When not, then not. So now when we're saying that, so one possibility is the shamas still continue to follow their own opinions is even after the baskel, they may have held in that regard, like Rabbi Yeshua, ein mashkichin b'baskel, and therefore they're still entitled to follow their own opinion. Until eventually the halacha was decided once and for all that it's like this hill. Okay, so now getting back to the main point, the Gemara says, Umanda Amar Asu, nu, so according to Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel, who say that Bishamai, let's revisit the discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish had asked, what about Lotus Goydidu? So we brought up in that connection our Mishnah. So Rish Lakish says it wasn't a matter of loytis goydidu because in our Mishnah, Bais Shammai did not actually follow their opinion in practice. They just tell it as a matter of halacha that the woman is mutter and yibum. But now we're having Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel who say that they did follow their opinion. So umandama asu. So according to the opinions that say that Bais Shammai followed their own opinion, kodin kan loytis goydidu loysasu agudas agudas. Don't you have this problem of loytis goydidu that you're not allowed to make different factions and cliques that are following the halacha differently? So how does that work? How do you have Bais Shammai and Bais Hillel each following their own understanding of the halacha without that being a problem? Omer Abaya. So Abaya answers, Ki Amrinan, Loitis Goydidu, when do we apply this concept of Loitis Goydidu? Kugun Shnei Bote Dinim, Be'ir Achas. Suppose that you have two Bote Dinim in one city, Halalu Mordim, Kediv Beshamai, Bahalalu Mordim, Kediv Beshillo, where one paskins like Beshamai and the other paskins like Beshillo, then you have a problem of Loitis Goydidu. But if the different bate dinim are in different cities, less lanba, then there's no problem with it. So the idea would be, in other words, that he'd be saying, in effect, Bais Shammai and Bais Hillel are considered like bate dinim in different cities. They may not have always been in different cities. I mean, they were scattered all over Eretz Yisrael, but you would have necessarily places, for example, in Yerushalayim, where you would have people of Bais Shammai and people of Bais Hillel. But Abaya is saying that when you have it in one city, then there's a problem. But when you have it in different cities, then there's no problem. Now, Tosfos brings up, so the Gemara hasn't dealt with the question of Megillah reading. So how is it? In Megillah reading, what happens? The villagers come into the city on the Yom HaKnissa, and they read the Megillah over there. And then the next day, or 2 days later, or 3 days later, the Bnei Ha'ir, the people of that same city, the ones who actually live there, are also reading the Megillah. According to Abaya, that should be a problem. So Tosfos brings that actually what it is that these villagers would actually not read in, they wouldn't come into the big city, they would assemble in a shul in their city, and they would read the Megillah there. So therefore it's considered like two different cities, because they're not doing it in the big city, they're doing it in their village, in the shul, they're doing it in the shul in their village. So therefore that wouldn't be a problem.
Even if it's two different cities, people eventually will realize that they're following two different halachas, and it's going to be the exact same result.
that's the thing. Abaya is saying when you have, that's the thing. Abaya is saying that when it's in two different cities, it doesn't appear that they're following two Torahs. Yes, a person can travel from one city to another, but it doesn't, according to the Rashi's reason that it looks like they're acting like two Torahs, it doesn't. But the fact is, it is different cities. And according to the Rambam, who phrases it that it brings to Machloikas, it's also not going to be, it's also not going to be, it's not going to be a Machloikas because it's being done in different places. So according to Tosfos, the vote is because it actually took place in different cities. On the other hand, the Rosh says that not. The Rosh says the people of the villages would in fact read in the big city, but because they're making their own minyan for the purpose, then therefore it's still not considered as if it was Shnei Batadinim Be'irachas. If you had some people, if you had some of the people from the big city are joining them and laying the Megillah early, and others of them are laying on the 14th, then that would be a problem of Shnei Batadinim Be'irachas. But like this, when they're making their own minyan and reading over there, the Rosh learns that that's not even according to Abaya, that wouldn't be a problem. So the Gemara continues. What do you mean? After all, Beshama and Beshilo is like two Batidinim in the same city. The fact is, there were places in Eretz Yisrael, for example, in Yerushalayim, where you had both people of Beshama and people of Beshilo, and that's in one city. So your understanding of Loitis Goydudu doesn't seem to work. Ella Omar Rabba. So Rava says, when you have a basin in one city, where within that basin itself, some of them paskin like with Shammai and paskin to other people to do that way, and others tell people to follow Beis Hillel, that would be a problem of Lotus Goyidu. But when you have two different Bate Dinim in one city, then there's no problem with it, says Rava, because we understand that each basedin has their own way of understanding. Sometimes the halacha will eventually be decided one way or the other. Like we said, eventually the halacha was decided like Beis Hillel against Beis Shammai, but not always. Until the halacha is decided, people will understand it's not kishtei teres, and it's not going to cause machlokes because people understand that different chachamim have different ways of understanding things. The interesting thing is the Rambam, when he formulates this halacha, he uses the lashon of Abaya, shtei batadinim ve'irachas. And a number of the Noisa Kalim on the Rambam ask, since when do we paskin like Abaya against Rava? So one answer is, in fact, since Abaya and Rava are not arguing their own independent machlokes, they're just talking about within the opinion of the earlier chachamim, then maybe the Rambam can paskin like Abaya. On the other hand, some of the Noisa Kalim over there talk about that maybe the Rambam is using Abaya's Loshen, but he means like Rava, that we don't mean two separate Batidinim, but we mean when there's one, when they act like two separate Batidinim, each one giving their own Psak Halacha, but really, in fact, they're one based in. So in practice, there are areas where we do say this matter of Loitis Goydudu. One example is, I mean, we're going to continue in the sugya now and discuss more of the ins and outs of it. But for example, you have an issue that there's a lot of different opinions among the Rishonim and Achronim. What exactly are the parameters of Loitis Goydudu and when we apply it and when we don't? For example, it's clear from the Gemara over here that when it's a matter of Isser Veheter, then it's a more serious thing than just a matter of Minhag. So for example, when you have, let's say, putting on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, some people do, some people don't. If you have in one shul, some are doing one way and some are doing the other way, that would be an example of Loitis Goydudu. So you can't do that. When it comes, on the other hand, to Nusach HaTefillah, maybe you don't have that. It's not a matter of each side says that the other one's Nusach is Osir. It's just it's not our Nusach. So then maybe you have a little more latitude for it. Although even then, in order not to cause machloikas, maybe you don't do your Nusach publicly in a way that shows that it's different than the others. Let's say, for example, you have different minhagim about when in davening you say Hashamnu. So follow what the rest of the minyan is doing rather than following your own Nusach, even if it's different. So there's a lot of discussion. There's a lot of discussion, pro and con, about the ins and outs of these things. Another example that the Alter Rebbe brings from the Magen Avraham and from earlier poskim about during the days of Sfira. We know that there were the different minhagim during Sfira Sa'omer of when you're not allowed to cut your hair and make weddings and so forth. So if you're machmir like all of them, that's not a big deal because you're being machmir because you don't know which one the halacha is like. But for example, you can have a case of Lotus go to do over there where you have some people in town follow one minhag and some follow the other, then you can have an issue with that. All right, so the Gemara continues, Toshma. So far you're saying that Abaye is saying that only if it's two separate bata dinim in one city, then it's a problem. But if it's in different cities, there's no problem. And Rava is saying even within the same city itself, it's only a problem if the base din over there is some of them are paskening one way and some the other way. So the Gemara says Toshma bim koyme shor Rabbi Yezer in Rabbi Yezer's city, hayukosim etzim lasis pachamim b'Shabbos lasis barzel. When there was a bris milah Shabbos, now Rabbi Yezer hold that everybody knows that milah bizmana is doicha Shabbos. Rabbi Yezer holds that not only the milah but also machshire milah, also the things, also the prerequisites that have to be done in order for the milah to take place. One of them being a knife. So suppose you don't have a knife, Rabbi Yezer will allow you to make a knife, to forge a knife on Shabbos. So, and he would allow you even to go to the extent of you have to chop wood in order to make charcoal, in order to forge the knife. He will allow all of that because it's all machshirei mitzvah. So in Rabbi Eliezer's city, they used to do that, lasis barzel, to make an iron knife that they could use for milah. In fact, Tosafos says it doesn't just mean that they would do that if they had no alternative. They would dafka bring themselves to that situation. They would dafka, if they knew that there was bris milah coming up on Shabbos, they would make sure before Shabbos that no knife is available so that on Shabbos they would have to forge one because of chibuv mitzvah. They wanted to show, given that they were in Rabbi Eliezer's city and they passed them like Rabbi Eliezer, that you're allowed, then they wanted to demonstrate that the mitzvah of milah is so precious that all of these prerequisites for it override Shabbos.
He followed and the opinion of Reb Shimon?
Rabbi Eliezer. They followed the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer holds that machshir and milah are doicha Shabbos.
And they like Reb Shimon.
What does Reb Shimon have to do with it?
Reb Shimon also holds that machshir mitzvah.
No, Reb Shimon doesn't hold any such thing. Reb Shimon holds Dovah Sheni Meskaven Mutter. That's a whole different matter. Reb Eliezer holds machshir milah, and other similar mitzvahs that wherever the mitzvah is Deicha Shabbos, the machshir, and also Reb Akiva disagrees. The halacha in the end is like Reb Akiva. So if you don't have the knife for the milah, then you're not allowed to do the bris milah on Shabbos. You have to postpone it to Sunday. But Rabbi Eliezer held differently in his city before the halacha was passing against him. Then they're entitled to follow his opinion. Similarly, the Braisa continues, Bim komesh Rabbi Yosi Agrili, ho yo'ichem b'sar oif b'cholov. In Rabbi Yosi Agrili's city, they used to eat bird meat, chicken, or other kinds of birds with milk. Rabbi Yosi Agrili held that that's not osir, neither daraisa nor derabanan. Daraisa, because the Torah says loisavashal di bachalev imo, so it only applies to species that have mother's milk and birds don't. And he held, Rabbi Yosi Agrili, that there's not even a gzeda derabanan on it. So in his city, they used to do that. Now the implication is b'mkaymeshar Rabbi Yezer ain b'mkaymeshar Rabbi Akiva loy. Now the implication is that in Rabbi Yezer's city they would make a knife for a bris milah on Shabbos, but in Rabbi Akiva's city, for example, they would not. The Tanya, and the reason is because we learn in a brisa. Klal Omer Rabbi Akiva kol malacha she'ef shalah asosim erev Shabbos ein doiches a Shabbos. Any malacha such as making the knife that could have been done erev Shabbos is not doiches Shabbos. So therefore, according to him, you're not allowed to make the knife on Shabbos where you could have made it before Shabbos. So the Gemara says, okay, well, I might yukta. Well, what exactly is the question? What are you even bringing this braisa as a contradiction? Mekomis shiny. Different places, of course, different places can have different minhagim. So the Gemara says, oh, you're right. Ka'ori la mai ka'ori la. So whoever brought up the question, what was he even thinking to bring up the question? We said before that even Abaya would say that if it's a different city, there's no problem of Lotus going to do. So obviously there's a difference between Rabbi Eliezer's city and Rabbi Akiva's city and so forth. So why did the Makshin even bring up this Braisa? The answer is Sakrat Khamina Mishum Khumar the Shabbos Kmakamachadam. You could have argued that because Shabbos is so stringent, maybe it should be considered as if it was one place, and therefore we should say that if in any place they hold that you're not allowed to make a knife on Shabbos, then in all places, even in Rabbi Eliezer's city, to do that would be a violation of Loitis Godidu, Kamash Malan, and therefore the Machshon is telling us, I didn't think, and therefore we're saying that, well, that's why the Machshon had the question, because of the Chumrah of Shabbos, we should treat it that way, Kamash Malan, and the answer is that no, that even so it is, the fact is, it is Shnei Mekomis, and there's no difference in that regard between Shabbos and other halachas, and therefore, as long as it's two different cities, then Loitis Godidu doesn't apply. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Let's bring a proof from an example. It's interesting, you know, most of the time when we have Toshma, usually it means we're bringing a Mishnah or a Braisa. Here we have a rare example where Toshma is brought on something that an Amora did. Because Maisa Rab, when an Amora does something, rather than just saying the halacha is such and such, then that's a very powerful thing. So, Rabba Bohu. Ki ikla la'asri di Rabbi Shurban Levi, when Rabbi Bohu would visit the city where Rabbi Shurban Levi lived, have a metaltal shraga, then on Shabbos, he would move a lamp. So we're talking about a lamp that had been lit before Shabbos, and then on Shabbos it went out. Now here's where we come in to Rabbi Shimon, not as far as Dov Hashem Miskaven, but as far as that Rabbi Shimon holds of a very narrow concept of mukta, and therefore Rabbi Shimon holds that even a lamp that was lit before Shabbos, but now it went out, Rabbi Shimon holds that it's not mukta. So Rabbi Bohu, when he visited Rabbi Shurban Levi's city, and Rabbi Shurban Levi held that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, have a metal to shraga, then Rabbi Bohu would move the lamp on Shabbos. But when he visited Rabbi Yechanan's city, and Rabbi Yechanan held that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, not like Rabbi Shimon, so the lamp is mukta, then Rabbi Bohu would not move the lamp. And now Tosfos says, now the Gemara could have easily answered that, okay, he doesn't move the lamp because maybe he doesn't happen to have a need to move it. Just like we said before at the beginning of the sugya, that if a person doesn't do malacha on the night going into Erev Pesach, then it means just maybe he doesn't have work to do. So Tosfos says it means that even when it was very obvious that the lamp is in the way, for example, it fell onto his coat, and then he would want to move it in order to get his coat. Still, when he was in Rabbi Yechanan's city, he wouldn't, because Rabbi Yechanan held that the halacha is that it's mukta. So the Gemara says, "V'hai my kusha." So what's the question? B'loy aminin makomis shiny. We already said that different places are allowed to have different minhagim. So yeah, Rabbi Shurban Levi's city has one minhag. Rabbi Yechanan's city has a different minhag. What's the problem? The answer is a non-hochi kamunin. Fine, but here the question is rather as follows. Rabbi Bohu, hechi ovid hocha hochi, behechi ovid hocha hochi. The question is on Rabbi Bohu himself. How is he following different minhagim, different understandings of halacha in different places? So before we had, for example, the people who made a knife on Shabbos in Rabbi Eliezer's city were not the same ones who in a different place would not make a knife. And the same thing with eating, But here we have the same person, Rabbi Bohu, is going to different places and following the halacha one way in one place and a different way in a different place. So how is he doing that? And the answer is, Rabbi Bohu could have Shurban Levi Svirale. Basically, Rabbi Bohu holds like Rabbi Shurban Levi. It is, in fact, mutter. But when he visited Rabbi Yechanan's city, the reason why he wouldn't move it, not because he held its aser, but because of kavod of Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yechanan holds its aser, so he's not going to be mocked it right in front of him. So the Gemara asks for Ika Shama. What about, though, doesn't Rabbi Bohu have an attendant over there, and the attendant is not going to realize? Rashi explains, he sees Rabbi Bohu moving the lamp in other places. He's not going to realize that out of the covet of Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Bohu is refraining. So isn't the Shamash going to end up moving it in the presence of Rabbi Yechanan? And the answer is the Moedalei L'Shama. The answer is Rabbi Bohu would inform the attendant ahead of time that he should be careful not to move it. That he should be careful not to move it out of covet for Rabbi Yechanan. Tosfos Yeshanim actually points out, what is that whole question and answer doing over here? We're talking about agudas agudas. What is the question of what the attendant, the fact that he's going to make a mistake? Why is that even relevant to our sugya? It belongs in the Masechta Shabbos when we're dealing with this matter of Rav Abahu moving or not moving the lamp. And of course, also Tosfos Yeshanim says, what's the Gemara even asking? Of course, he has to inform his attendant of what he's doing so that the attendant should do the same thing. So Tosfos Yeshanim explains that the attendant is going to mistakenly think that you're allowed to make agudas agudas. So therefore, it's relevant to our sugya. He sees that Rav Abahu is doing one thing in one place and another thing in another place. So the shamash himself is going to think, you know what? There's no problem with agudas agudas. And the answer is that Rav Abahu informs him ahead of time, no, you're not allowed to make agudas agudas. The reason why you see me doing one thing in front of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi and another thing in front of Rabbi Yechanan is strictly out of covered for Rabbi Yechanan, but you should know that otherwise you are not allowed to make agudas agudas. So therefore, Tosfos Yeshanim says, in that case, that is very relevant to our sugya, which is why the Gemara brings it.
Why is the covered of one man more important than the whole tzibur who is going to be mistaken in halacha?
No, the whole tzibur.
Try and explain that to me.
The whole tzibur is not going to be mistaken in halacha. The whole tzibur is going to realize because Rabbi Yochanan holds this way, we're not going to be matter it in his presence. But other than that,
but you could have another case where they would be also a big tzaddik and they wouldn't take the precaution of telling the people beforehand.
That is exactly what Tosfos Yeshanim says. That is exactly why Rav Abahu made sure to inform his shamash, don't think that agudas is allowed. This is a special case. So yes, if you're going to do that, then you have to inform people. That would be the point.
So that would be the halacha, that you have to inform people?
That would be when necessary, when you're being machmir, out of covered for a tamid chacham. Yes, you would have to inform people that you're doing it because of that rather than because you hold the halacha that way. Yeah.
Okay.
So the Gemara goes on. Toshma, now we're still trying to show about this matter of agudas agudas, and we still had the discussion earlier on the Amud that said whether Beis Shammai actually followed their opinion in practice or whether they only held it as a matter of halacha. Well, Toshma, let's prove from the continuation of our Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Af pi she'elo osrim ve'elo maturim, even though Beis Hillel holds that the women are osir, and Beis Shammai holds their mutter, loy nimnu Beis Shammai melissa noshim ve'Beis Hillel, v'loy Beis Hillel me'Beis Shammai. Nevertheless, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had no problem marrying wives from each other's groups. Now, if you say, like Rish Lakish and like Rab, that Beis Shammai never followed their opinion in practice, well, that explains then why they wouldn't hold back, because the worst that could happen is, the worst that could happen is you're going to be over on an Isur Lav, because what happens? The ones that Beis Hillel are saying are potter from Chalitza and Yibum. So if they get married, so they're over on the issue of Loisia Eishes Hamei Sachutzal Eishzor according to Beis Shammai, but that's only a chiyuv, that's only an issur lav. You can't have a mamzer from an issur lav, only from an issur krisis. So therefore, that explains why nobody had a problem marrying from each other, because even if, so what would happen? So Beis Hillel would be telling these women that you don't do, you're potter from Chalitza or Yibum, go ahead, marry whoever you want. So they would be going and getting married. According to Beis Shammai, they would be over on a lav because they are in fact chayev in Chalitza or in Yibum. However, Beis Shammai would say, you know what? It's only an those women were over on an issur lav. Their children are not mamzerim. We have no problem marrying their children. Tosfos says, the tzara herself, they don't want to be over on a lav with the tzara herself, but the tzara herself is not very common. That you should have the tzara eventually remarries and has children. Okay, people have a lot of children. That the tzara herself should be up for marriage, that would be rare enough. Fine. Now, obviously, if tzara herself was up for marriage, then Beis Shammai wouldn't marry her because they don't want to be over on an issur lav. But the children of that tzara who remarried without chalitza or yibum, according to Beis Shammai, she was only over on an issur lav. Her children are still 100% kosher. So therefore, fine, we would understand why they have no problem marrying.
All the Surim of Erva are not Croesus. They all love him.
One second, relax. Listen, what we're explaining is as follows. Beis Hillel holds that these women are potter from chalitza and yibum, meaning that according to Beis Hillel, when we have this tzara, when she goes and marries somebody else without doing chalitza or yibum, according to Beis Hillel, what she did was perfectly fine. According to Beis Shammai, she was over on an issur lav, not an issur kares. The other way around, that's what the Gemara is going to discuss now. If we say, like Beis Hillel, that you're not allowed to do chalitza or yibum, and that she's an erva, and she does yibum, then you'd have the other way around. According to Beis Hillel, she's done an issur kares. According to Beis Shammai, what she did was mutter. But first we're discussing, if we say that Beis Shammai never followed their own opinion in practice, they never told these women, go do yibum. They just told them, they told them, we ourselves hold you would need yibum, but in practice, because Beis Hillel says that you don't, therefore we're not going to make you do yibum or chalitza. So now what would happen is these women would get married. They would be doing, according to Beis Shammai, they would be doing an issur lav. However, their children would be kosher, and Beis Shammai was saying would have no problem marrying such children because they're not mamzerim. So that would explain, if we say that loy osu, then that explains why neither side has a problem marrying women from the other side. Beis Hillel has no problem marrying women from Beis Shammai, because definitely if these women did chalitza, then nothing's wrong. Then certainly they're allowed to marry others. There's not even an issur lav. If they didn't do chalitza, like Beis Hillel says, then Beis Shammai would hold the women themselves were over on an issur lav, but their children are kosher, and therefore Beis Shammai would have no problem marrying their children. So everything's good. But
what would Beis Hillel hold about the children of Beis Shammai who did marry?
No. We did 1 second. That's what we're saying. According, if we say that Beis Shammai loy osu, then Beis Hillel would say Beis Shammai hasn't done anything wrong. They didn't actually do yibum. They either did chalitza or they did nothing. So if they did chalitza, there's for sure no problem. And if they did nothing, then Beis Hillel would say, that's fine. Also, you have no problem. You didn't have a zikah in the first place. It would be Beis Shammai that would be having, on the face of it, that would be having a problem with a woman from Beis Hillel having married without chalitza or yibum, where Beis Shammai holds they require that. But even so, Beis Shammai would say, look, yivam al-ashruk is only an issur lav. So therefore, there's no problem. There's no issur kares involved. So the woman herself, fine. They wouldn't want to marry her because they don't want to be over on an issur lav. But Tosfos says, look, there's not that many women like that who are in that situation of tzaras erva. But their children, a woman you generally has a lot of children. So the children, there would potentially be more of an issue. But we're saying they're not, because those children were born from what Beis Shammai would consider an issur lav, but not issur kares. So there's no problem. Now comes the question: Eli Amit Osu. But if you say that Beis Shammai actually followed their own opinion and practice, meaning that in this case of tzaras erva, they would tell her go do yibum, then at my lenimnu. So how could Beis Hillel freely marry within Beis Shammai? The Shlema Beis Shammai, the Beis Hillel lenimnu. We can understand that Beis Shammai would have no problem marrying women from Beis Hillel, because, as we just said, Dibnei Chayve Lavan Minu. Because again, if we say that Beis Shammai holds these women require yibum, and then they followed Beis Hillel and did not do yibum because they held that they're potter, then according to Beis Shammai, they've only been over on a lav and their children are completely kosher. Ela Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai, amai lenimnu. How could Beis Hillel say we have no problem marrying anybody from Beis Shammai? Bnei Chai v'Krisus Mamzerim Ninu. After all, according to Beis Hillel, if this tzaras erva does yibum, then according to, following the opinion of Beis Shammai, and we're talking over here according to the opinion that also that Beis Shammai actually followed their opinion halacha l'maisa, then you would have cases of tzaras erva where Beis Shammai would tell them go do yibum, and they would, but according to Beis Hillel, they've done an issur kares and their children be mamzerim. So how could we say, so doesn't that prove that loy osu, doesn't that prove that Beis Shammai did not actually follow their opinion in practice? V'chitema, so you're going to answer, maybe that's not a problem because kasabri Beis Hillel de'en mamzim echai v'krisis. Maybe Beis Hillel also hold that, like an opinion which we're going to have later on in our Masechta, that you only have a mamzer from, that you don't have a mamzer from chai v'krisis, only from chai v'misis based in. So most of the arayas, of the 15 women that we mentioned in the first Mishnah, many of them, there's only an issur kares. And b'chlal, or never mind that, never mind the chamesh esur nashim, actually. The eishes ochi is an issur kares. There's no misas based in involved in a brother's wife when there's no yibum, only kares. So So you're going to argue, maybe this Hillel holds, that even if there's an Isser Kodesh, the children are still considered kosher, only if there was a matter of Misses based in, for example, an HS Ish, or daughter-in-law, or mother-in-law, or whatever, only then would the children be Mamzerim. And therefore, you see, you would say, hypothetically, that this Hillel would say, look, we have this woman who did Yibum. According to us, she did an Isser Kodesh. According to Beis Shammai, what she did was Mutter. However, we would hold that her children are still kosher, even though it was an Isser Kodesh. But that's not the case. Because Rabbi Lazar clearly says, even though they have this machlokas about tzaris, they both agree that a mamzer is only from a union where it's an erva and where there's koris. So we see that Beis Hillel does hold that there are mamzerim from chayvei krusis. So doesn't that demonstrate that it has to be Beis Shammai did not follow their own opinion, halacha l'maisa, and therefore there would never be an actual case of a woman who did Yibum according to Beis Shammai, where according to Beis Hillel, what she did was an Isur Kares, and that her children should be Mamzerim according to Beis Hillel? The answer is, no, we could say that Beis Shammai did follow their opinion in practice. The reason why Beis Hillel had no problem marrying women from Beis Shammai is because, like we said in the Mishnah, they would inform them and they would stay away. So if there was a shidduch being writ between a family of Beis Hillel and a family of Beis Shammai, and the situation was that the person from Beis Shammai was the son or the daughter of a woman who had done Yibum like that, then Beis Shammai would inform Beis Hillel, you know what, according to us, this child is completely kosher and there'd be no problem marrying, but you should know, according to your opinion, this child is a mamzer, so don't marry them. So therefore, so that would be why. It just doesn't mean that Beis Shammai didn't follow their opinion in practice. It means that if there was any potential problem, they would inform them. And the Gemara says,
then Beis Hillel had to check the generations of Beis Shammai every time their women married into.
That's the point. They wouldn't have to check because they could rely on Beis Shammai to tell them. That's what we said in the Mishnah. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. That Chibur Bereus Noigan Zebazeh. The person from Beis Shammai would say, even though as far as I'm concerned, there's no reason to check the yichus, the child is 100% kosher. But I know that according to you, Beis Hillel, this child is a mamzer because her mother or her grandmother or her great-grandmother or whatever did something which according to you is an Isser Kares, therefore don't marry her. That was the point. They could rely on Beis Shammai to tell them. And the Gemara says, one second, v'hochi namim istabra. In fact, it's logical to understand it that way, that it's not just a matter of Beis Shammai not following their opinion in practice, but that it's an actual matter of them informing them. Tikatani sefer, because the continuation of the Mishnah goes, kol ataris v'kol atumas show you elam atarin ve'elam atamin. We said there were all kinds of cases of tumah v'tara where one holds that it's tahor and one holds that it's tameh. Lo nimnu oisin taris elu agabe elu. Nevertheless, they still did not avoid doing taris one based on the other. In other words, they could freely lend and borrow kalim one from the other. Now Rashi says Beis Hillel is more machmir in taris. So you have the same thing. If you're saying that Beis Shammai would always inform Beis Hillel whenever there's any potential problem according to Beis Hillel, well, that would explain why they don't have to avoid borrowing kalim, because they know if the man or the woman from Beis Shammai doesn't tell them anything, then they know they can trust that this kalim is tahor. If there's going to be any problem, Beis Shammai knew what Beis Hillel held and vice versa, then they would tell them, you know what? You want to borrow this keli? You should know, according to your opinion, Beis Hillel, this keli is tamei. So if you want to borrow it from me, make sure you make it tahor first. So that would work. Eli amad deloy modilahu. But if you would say that they don't inform them, and each side would follow their opinion without telling the other one if there were any potential problem, well, b'shlema b'shamai b'shillo nimnu, then we can understand why b'shamai would have no problem borrowing from b'shillo, the tumas to b'shamai taras nimnu, because there are many cases where b'shillo is machmir in tumah v'tara and b'shamai is makel. So therefore, so b'shamai would have no problem, because any keli that they borrow from b'shillo, if it's tamei, according to b'shillo, If it's Tomei according to Beis Hillel, if Beis Shammai agrees that it's Tomei as well, sure, Beis Hillel is not going to be lending it to them because they're not going to knowingly lend them something that is Tomei according to everybody. But if it was Tomei according to Beis Hillel, but Tahor according to Beis Shammai, no problem. The person from Beis Shammai would say, Tahor for me, so I have no problem borrowing it. But how could Beis Hillel not avoid borrowing Kalin from Beis Shammai? Taras to Beis Shammai the Beis Hillel Tmeis Ninu. After all, there are many cases that Beis Shammai holds that something is Tahor and Beis Hillel holds it Tmei. So how would that work if they don't inform them? Ela lav demoidi lahu. Obviously, it must mean that they're informing them. Shmamina. So therefore, that demonstrates that they did in fact inform them whenever there was any potential problem. Now, so actually, Tosfos points out that the flow of the Gemara doesn't really go so well with this Hochi Namim Mistabra. It demonstrates that according to the opinion that also they would inform them. It doesn't really demonstrate necessarily that also. So therefore, Tosfos actually brings a Gusa from, so in other words, the Gemara is saying, if also, then they inform them, but that still doesn't demonstrate that necessarily also. So Tosfos says, listen, I mean, since when is Beis Shammai more makel than Beis Hillel? We know that usually Beis Hillel is more makel. So how can the Gemara be saying that Beis Hillel is machmir? So Tosfos brings a Gusa from Rabbeinu Hananel that says the other way around, that we can understand that Beis Hillel wouldn't avoid borrowing Kalim from Beis Shammai because they're more usually makel, but how could Beis Shammai be borrowing from Beis Hillel? And the answer would be that Beis Hillel necessarily would have to be telling them. So now it doesn't matter whether Osu or Loi Osu, the fact is that Beis Shammai hold in certain cases these Kalim are Tomei, Beis Hillel holds their Tahor. The only way it would work for them to freely borrow Kalim would be if Beis Hillel every time would inform them when there's any potential problem. The Aruch HaNer explains that Rashi may hold that, in fact, when you look in the Mishnayos and Eidos, where you have different cases where Beis Shammai is Mekel and Beis Hillel is Machmir, if you count up, you have different Tanoim that say over there different cases where they're Mekel or Machmir, Rashi may hold that all of the Chachamim agree with all of those. In other words, just because it says, for example, Rabbi Yehuda said that there are such and such cases where Beis Shammai is Mekel doesn't mean that the other Chachamim disagree with him. It just means that Rabbi Yehuda had learned those particular ones from his Rebbeim. So therefore, the Aruch HaNer says, if you count them up, you may well find that Beis Shammai is makel in more cases of Tumah V'Tahara than Beis Shammai is more makel in more cases of Tumah V'Tahara than Beis Hillel is. Whatever the case, the point is, the Gemara is saying that we see that they would in fact inform them. So the Gemara says, okay, well, in that case, so we have two, so what is it, what are we saying? What was the flow of the Gemara? We were saying, we're trying to prove that they would inform them. We're saying because otherwise the whole thing with marriage wouldn't work because there could be potential chayvei krisis over there. And we're saying, you can prove it from the fact that we see that they would borrow kalim of each other. So, why is the proof from the matter of kalim stronger than the proof from the matter of arayas? And the answer is Mao Dekema, Tzara Kola Isla, because you could argue when there's a case of Tzara's Erva, there's a coil. So you could say maybe in that case, Beis Shammai does not have to inform Beis Hillel of anything because Beis Hillel themselves would know if this family had a Tzara's Erva in it, who was married without Chalitz or Yibum, it becomes well known. And therefore, if we didn't hear about it, then it means there was no such case and we don't have a problem. So Kamash Malan, therefore, we're being told that no, not necessarily is there a curl. They would in fact have to inform them. And we know that they had to inform them from the case of the Kalim, where it's clear they had to inform them because the Kalim, obviously there's no curl, whether they became Tomei or Tahor. So therefore, obviously they would have to inform them in that case. So therefore we can assume that in the case of the Arayas, of the Tzoris, we can also say that they would actually inform them rather than relying on the presence or the absence of a curl. So the Gemara says, Gufa, getting back to something that we said a little while earlier, Amar Rav Elazar, Afakish Nechlaku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel B'Tzores, we said that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued about these Tzores Erva, whether they're allowed to do Chalitza or Yibum, or whether on the contrary, they're also to do Yibum. Moedim She'en Mamzer Ela Mishe Yisura Yisru Erva V'Onosh Kores. They agree, they admit that a Mamzer is only somebody who is born from a union where there's an erva and where there's kores involved, which means all the arayas, because all the arayas, some of them have missus based in as well, but all of them have kores. So the question is, man moedim, what do you mean? When we say they admit, means like one group admits to the other, but which group holds that way that the other one, which group is the original one who says that, who would hold that way that the other one has to admit to them that you're correct? Ilema bis shamai the basilo. Would we say that Beis Shammai is admitting to Beis Hillel? They're saying, in that, we concede that you, Beis Hillel, are correct. Pshita. Well, of course, b'nei chai v'lav and ksherim. Of course, people who come from an isur lav, for example, this yivama l'shruch, are kosher. So there's nothing that needs to be admitted to. Ela b'shamay l'b'shilol. Do you mean that b'shamay agrees to b'shilol? Do you mean that b'shilol agrees with b'shamay? What do you mean he gufa chai v'krisis? In this particular case of Saras Erva, if she did Yibum, again, but Hillel would hold that there was an Isser Karis over here, and they would hold there is Mamzeris over here. So who's admitting to who? If a woman does not do Chalitza or Yibum and she marries out, then according to Beshamai, she's done an Isser Lab, but there's nothing to admit to. There's nothing to admit to because, of course, it's only an Isser Lab, and everybody agrees there's no, and we know there's no Mamzeris from that. And if we're saying that Beshilo agrees with Beshamai and says that there's no mamzer except for chayvet krisus, well, this is chayvet krisus. Ever la'olam Beshamai leBeshilo. What it means is that Beshamai agrees to Beshilo that there's no mamzerus over here. So why do they need to say that? Ulapuki midir Rabbi Akiva, because we need to be told not like Rabbi Akiva. Da'omer yesh mamzer mechayvet laven. Later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about that Rabbi Akiva holds that even chayvet laven produce a mamzer, which would mean if we held like Rabbi Akiva, if Bes Shammai held like Rabbi Akiva, then they would say then the problem would be reciprocal. Not only would we be saying that Bes Hillel would have a problem that there could be women from Bes Shammai's family who could be mamzerim because their mothers were at Saras Erva who did Yibum, but even, and we would say therefore Bes Shammai would have to inform them, which they did, but we would say if Bes Shammai held like Rabbi Akiva, then it would be the other way around, that if there was a woman who followed Bes Hillel in this scenario of Saras Erva and did not do Chalitza or Yibum and went and married somebody else, If Beshamai holds that she has to do Chalitza or Yibum, if Beshamai held like Rabbi Akiva, then they would say that that child is also a mamzer, and Beshilo would have to inform them, don't marry my daughter because according to you, she's a mamzeres because you hold like Rabbi Akiva. Kamash Malanda ain't mamzer, Mechai V'Lavin, therefore Rabbi Elazar wants us to know that it's not so. Beshamai does not hold like Rabbi Akiva's opinion. They agree with Beshilo that there's a mamzer only from Chai V'Krisus, so therefore there could potentially be children from Beshamai who according to Beis Hillel are mamzerim, but not vice versa. There could never be a case where Beis Hillel would have where there would be a marriage following Beis Hillel's opinion that would result in mamzerim according to Beis Shammai, because the maximum you could have is an issur lav, the issur of yivama l'shuk, and Beis Shammai agrees that that doesn't produce mamzerim. We'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Can you do a small recap on where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are disagreeing with the Saras Erva?
Yeah. So let's say, for example, let's take the first case of the beginning of the Masechta, where for example, Shimon is married to Reuven's daughter. And he's also married to an unrelated woman. So now, what we said is, if Shimon dies childless, then Reuven obviously has no zika with his own daughter. Beis Hillel holds, so we said as a Stam Mishnah and the first Mishnah, and now we're saying, this is the opinion of Beis Hillel, that the Tzara, the unrelated woman, is also Potter from Chalitza and Yibum, because she was a Tzara's Erva, and we had a couple of explanations in the Gemara why she's Potter.
And Shammai says that they can get an Yibum.
But Shammai would say that the Erva herself, of course, there's no Zika, so Reuven is not doing Yibum with his own daughter. However, he would be required to do Yibum or Chalitza with the Tzara.
Okay.
So now,
they would be the Mamzer, according to Beis Hillel.
According to Beis Hillel, that this woman is also in Chalitza or Yibum, if Beis Shammai followed their opinion and actually did Yibum, then according to Beis Hillel, they've produced a Mamzer. They've done an Issur Kares and produced a Mamzer. So first we were saying in the Gemara, so we have two opinions in the Gemara. One opinion is that that problem never came up in practice because the Shammai did not actually follow their opinion in practice. Loy Osu, they did not actually tell these women to do Yibum. They would say, we hold the halacha that you're required to do Yibum, but in practice they wouldn't have them do that. The other possibility is also that they did in fact do that, but they would inform Beis Hillel if there came up any shidduch that involved any case where there had been such a thing in the family tree, then they would inform Beis Hillel, and Beis Hillel would know not to marry them.
According to both opinions, did they do chalitza?
That's what Gemara is going to end up bringing at the bottom of the Amud. We brought actually at the beginning of the sugya, right after the Mishnah, that Rabbi Yechon Menuri argues that what they should do is chalitza, because that way you're covered according to all possibilities. However, we're going to see in the Gemara, we'll learn tomorrow, we learned at the beginning of the sugya, that Beis Hillel themselves did not hold that way, and in the continuation of our Gemara, which we'll learn tomorrow, Beis Hashem, the top of Kesavav Amud Aleph, we're going to say that Rav Gamliel, that Rav Shimon Gamliel rather disagrees with that concept as well. So, and
with Tumah Vatara, it appears that Beis Shammai is usually more machmir. That's right. Rabbi Hananel's Girsa goes backwards from the Gemara.
Right, because part of the question is, in most of the time, Beis Shammai is more machmir. So how is the Gemara operating on an assumption that Beis Hillel is more machmir? So again, the Oruch Haner says, at least in Hilchos Tumah Vatara, it's possible that Beis Hillel, according to Rashi's understanding, is in fact machmir more often. But yeah, that's why Tosfos brings Rabbeinu Hananel's Girsa, that Beis Shammai are the ones who are more machmir, and yet we see they had no problem borrowing Kalim from Beis Hillel. So the reason must be because Beis Hillel would always inform them if there's any potential problem.
Okay, thanks.
And the Halacha is like Beis Hillel, of course.
Well, like Basil, most of the time, yeah, there's only officially six cases. There's the Yudches Dover, which they decided over there in the attic of Hanani ben Chizki ben Gorin. Other than that, officially, there's only six cases where the halacha is like this Shammai.
Which are, remind us?
A couple of them are in Hilchos Sukkah, a couple of them are in Hilchos Tzitzis, there's a couple of others. Mind you, we're not talking about, there are cases that the Gemara mentions here and there where Beis Hillel ended up conceding to Beis Shammai. We have such cases in other places in Shas where Beis Shammai held one way, Beis Hillel held a different way, and Beis Hillel ended up conceding to Beis Shammai. So then obviously the halacha is like Beis Shammai, but we're talking about when the machlokas persisted, most of the time the halacha is like Beis Hillel with a few exceptions. The famous thing that's brought in Sfarim, that the Asid Lover, the halacha, will be like Beis Shammai, meaning, in other words, not the Torah is not going to change, but given that we said earlier that Beis Shammai mechadid itfei, they were sharper, it means that the Asid Lover, the Evishter will give, that the members of the Sanhedrin will be able to understand and apply Beis Shammai's opinion more, they'll be able to understand the reasoning behind it and actually be able to apply and decide halacha l'maisa, that this is how it should be and that the world is ready for that kind of thing.
Okay.
Thank you.